And we'll take your calls this hour with Mark Edward as we talk about his work, Psychic Blues. He's a mentalist. And we'll be back with more in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Mark Edward with us this hour, your calls. Mark, after some deliberation, I've come up with my thoughts on how the mentalist can pick the number in a crowd.
Okay.
The guy who writes the number is in on the deal.
That's the simplest way to do it. Congratulations.
And people just think, oh my gosh, how did he pull it off? Because the people they find are the people that are in on the deal. They just look so regular.
That's right. And that's, again, it's Occam's razor. I'm sure you're familiar with that, right?
Yep.
You know, it's like, what is the simplest way that could be done? A stooge, of course. Not necessarily, but that would be the simplest way to do it. Yes.
God, there was a movie that John Malkovich portrayed, I think, The Amazing Kreskin.
Right.
And he had a skit where wherever he went, whatever town he was in, they gave his fee, the cash fee, to somebody in the audience. He apparently said he didn't know who it was. People thought that maybe there's somebody with a little microphone talking in his ear. And apparently he had experts come up, look in his ear and stuff like that. But almost all the time, he guessed who had his money in their pocket, in a shoe, somewhere.
Right.
I guess is that a mentalist trick as well? It's got to be.
Well, it's like with a lot of magic and conjuring, there's so many different methods to achieve the same effect. You know, I would have to see the actual performance of it, but, you know, there are many, many ways. My point being, without giving the secret away, again, what's the most obvious thing that you would think of to get that trick done? But there also there's muscle reading, which has been around for, I think, you know, since the 1870s.
Now, what's that?
Muscle reading it looks like real mind reading, but what it is it has to do with ideomotor response, which is how a pendulum works.
Okay.
In other words, Kreskin used to hide his check in the audience, and he would have somebody, he would take a handkerchief or something. You have to have contact with another person. I can't really give the secret away, otherwise Kreskin will sue me. But basically, it's an effect that's been around, and it is very close to real mind reading. And it appears to be pretty much the real deal, but it's a scientific method. There is a method to it.
Okay.
But it's completely camouflaged by the acting ability of the performer.
Well, the person who performs the trick, like Kreskin, like you, you've got to be geniuses at what you do.
Well, I appreciate your confidence in my abilities, but...
No, I'm serious. To be able to bamboozle so many people right in front of you,
right.
That's amazing.
Again, here's one of the key aspects of mentalism and psychic work as well, and it's in my book, is that when you're doing when you do a card trick or clever, you know, a handkerchief turns from red to green, people say, ah, beautiful, clever sleight of hand, very nice, and that's it. That there's no reason for it. It's kind of just, for me, that kind of magic is eye candy and nice to look at. But with mentalism and mind reading, it refers to a whole bigger referential world, meaning mind-to-mind communication. People want to believe in that. So when they want to believe in it, they will take the ball and run with it a lot further than they will if you just say, oh, this is a trick. It's the red handkerchief turning to the green handkerchief. So I think the audience is... tendency to want to believe, they will actually help you out. That's why when a psychic makes some random things that they're seeing and says, does that mean anything to anyone in the audience? Well, you know, if he's got an audience of 300 people and he says the name Helen, that's going to probably mean something to one of those people. And that person makes that connection, and then the psychic just goes with that until he runs out of steam with that person, and then they move on to another one.
I was in Las Vegas. I walked past a magic store, and I had to go in. Mm-hmm. And the guy in there sold me on a trick that made a little handkerchief disappear in his hand. And right. I kept looking at him, and I said, how in the heck does he do this? He wouldn't tell me. Right. So, but he said, you got to buy the trick. So I bought this kit. And I opened it up. And apparently what it was is there's a rubber thumb that looks like your thumb, and you stick it on your thumb. And by the way you pull it out, the hanky's in there, and then it goes back in, and then it sticks over your thumb, and you do that with sleight of hand. But nobody would ever know. Nobody looks at your thumb. It looks real.
Hiding in plain sight. That's what good magic's all about.
Copperfield, so Chris Angel, they're good, huh?
You put it in a drawer and promptly forgot about that trick, right?
I gave it to my producer as a gift.
There you go.
How does Chris Angel do what he does? Walk through plates of glass and things like that?
Well, again, these are tricks of the trade. I don't really consider myself an illusionist.
Okay. He's got to be good.
Well, I don't know what I want to say about that. Do I have to?
He's doing well in Vegas.
Yeah. Absolutely. But see, that's not what my book is about.
No, okay? I know that.
I mean, there are
It's not about making money.
Magicians, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely. Let's take some calls. All kinds are coming your way, Mark.
Okay, good. Good. I like calls.
All right. Let's go to Andy in Bellingham, Washington on the wild card line. Go ahead, Andy.
Good evening, you guys. How you doing?
Good to have you with us.
Good. Thank you.
I've got two stories you may be interested in. One was a dead relative that I saw when I was 2, and I didn't find out who exactly they were until I was 24 because of a picture. And the other one is an incident regarding the Santeria religion. You know, near some Hispanic people and some friends. So which one did you guys want to hear?
Take the first one you just gave me.
Okay, well, when I was 2, my dad had passed away when I was about 1.5, actually. And from the age of 2, 2.5, I used to see a cowboy that would stay in the closet in the room that I slept in. And my dad's mother, who had been estranged from him, also shared this room with me at this time. But she never saw this, and I never bothered waking her up. It didn't appear to be a ghost in a sense. People say that they glow light and the room lights up. It looked like a normal person, and at that time, to me, it didn't stand out at all. I was just, hey, there's a cowboy in my closet. I would tell my parents, and they didn't take me seriously. Years went by, and every time I looked back and thought about it, I just maybe thought it was my young mind imagining it. And then my dad had passed away when I was 22. So about 4 years after that, which was 1 year ago, I received a box of pictures and random belongings from my stepmother. They had moved and cleared out the closet or whatever. And immediately when I pulled out a picture, it was the only picture that exists of me with this individual, my grandfather, and I was 1, I think, and I was wearing his cowboy hat that he had taken off of me, and it was a Polaroid, and he was holding me up above his head, and you could see kind of one of those weird rings of light, and it was a Polaroid, you know, so it kind of just stands out more that way. And right when I saw this picture, boom, I flashed back to that moment, and this was that cowboy in my closet, and I know it for certain. It clicked in my head right away, and I knew that was the person I was seeing.
All right, how do we explain that, Mark?
Well, seems pretty normal to me, since you were present when the picture was taken, right?
Yeah, I was one year old. I don't remember it specifically, but it was definitely me when I was 1 year old, and it's written on the back, you know, Andy Nord.
I'm trying to thread the needle here. So if you were, whether you were 1 or 2, I mean, people remember their first, you know, they can remember things in their subconscious mind.
Sure.
Their conscious mind will not dredge up until a trigger is pulled somewhere. So you have a subconscious memory of being picked up and held by the cowboy.
I definitely believe that, and I want to tell you why, because
I'm trying to explain.
Hold on for a second.
Yeah.
So you have that memory, and then later you fantasize about that memory in that space, in that closet or wherever you were, and then later, yeah, you saw the picture and it immediately connected with you. But I don't see where the paranormal, I don't see anything paranormal there. I think that's just a memory.
Can the mind, Mark, be that strong, that powerful to mentally conjure up something and you actually think it's real?
Oh, absolutely. Is that a serious question?
Yeah. I mean, I don't mean with somebody who, maybe a little unstable or something, but for somebody that we would call normal, can they create this in their mind where they actually think it happened?
Absolutely. We can be fooled by the simplest optical illusion. And the mind is not always equipped to fill in the blanks, you know, and throw in some LSD and, you know.
Well, that we don't do.
I'm just saying.
I know.
I'm just saying.
I'm coming to the Magic Castle to harass you. Let's go to San Pedro, California. Bill's there. Hey, Bill, go ahead.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. Actually, I have many cases, but the first case that I like to talk about is using telepathy to find a cat.
To find a what?
Find a what? A cat.
Cat. Okay.
Okay. I was feeding the feral cat. It rained, and the cat ran away. And about 3 weeks later, I said, "Well, I'm going to find this cat."
Okay.
So I was at home, sitting at my desk, and I communicated with Cleo, and I said, "Oh, he's still alive. Good. After work tomorrow, I will communicate with you again and see if you're still alive, and I'll come find you." So what I received was the following. First of all, he's a block and a half away from me where he left. There were some circular windows, and he was at a place that looked like a prison, and the only way out is on the roof. So I drove from my home down to where he was
before he left.
And then that's about a mile and a half away. And then what I did was I walked one block. I come across the church. There were some windows. I said, oh, maybe they found him. Knocked on. He wasn't there. So then I went down to the corner. There is an open lot. I saw birds. No Cleo. I made a right turn, and I started going down an alley. And about 100 feet from the end of the alley, I seen this fence, and on the top of it was barbed wire. I said, oh, unbelievable. I looked on the roof, and guess who was sitting on the roof?
Cleo.
Yeah.
Well, how do we explain that one, Mark?
Well,
there you go. There's the evidence.
There are many people that go out looking for the missing cat and find it.
Is this intuition?
Again, I'm not sure what this has to do with my book. I think that, like I said, okay, let's make a clear differentiation. Okay, things happen. Okay, my book is about when people say they can make those things happen. In other words, if I won't mention any names, but let's just say Mr. X or Miss X got up on the stage and said, I see your cat on the roof, go there now, and you went there and found that cat, that would be...
All right, so you're not saying that Bill in San Pedro didn't have that event happen just the way he said.
Yeah.
You're saying the guy who goes on the stage and does all this mumbo-jumbo.
Or on television, or on Larry King, or Montel, or any of those shows. And also, I'd like to point out that, again, if we had the time to go into it, you know, like I said, he decided to go looking for his cat. What are the odds he's going to find it?
That's a good question.
It's an odds thing. There's nothing paranormal there. There's not. If you told me the cat levitated through the front door, or you know, or something really outstanding, I would say, well, that's worth investigating. But you know, a cat goes away, they stay in the neighborhood, they come back. It's these things happen to people all the time.
What about the person who says
anecdotes are not evidence?
What about the person who thinks, you know, gosh, you know, where's my buddy Mark Edward? And all of a sudden you call right at that.
But how many times did he the phone ring and it wasn't that person?
I don't know.
We tend to remember the hits and not the misses. It's that old thing, oh, I was just thinking about this person and the phone rang. Well, how many times are you thinking about some other person and the phone didn't ring? It doesn't mean anything. In other words, I'm not trying to put the cat story down. I'm just saying, so what?
When I was watching that,
sorry.
When I was watching that psychic that I bounced off the show on a TV show, she was talking about a missing boy. Told the family the kid
Hornbeck.
Sean Hornbeck from Missouri.
The classic example of how...
Said he was dead. This
is what I'm talking about. Anytime somebody says that they they tell a person's parents that their child is dead when they're later found alive, or alive when they're later found dead. That's what I'm talking about. That's the wrong. That's the blues. For that grandparent who was told by that same woman that her missing child was a sex slave in Japan.
Yeah,
and it turned out the child was found about two blocks away. She was dead from day one. That's not right.
No, it's not. No, it's not. My aunt, let me tell you about my aunt, who's no longer with us, Dr. Shafika Karegula. She was a psychiatrist and changed her practice, Mark, to study extrasensory perception and telepathy. She probably, had she not died in a very strange accident, by the way, had she not died, she might have uncovered some things. But, she was diving into all of this. And this was when Duke University was doing all its work. J.B. Ryan was doing his thing. And she was on to something. And unfortunately, her life was snuffed out. But she believed that there was something scientific there that was well worth studying. And then, she died before she was able to get her answers.
Hello?
Yep.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm not sure you
wanted you to react to my aunt's story.
Oh, well, there's a lot of people that have spent entire lifetimes chasing after it, and it can be mighty frustrating.
I mean, but she was a scientist, a medical doctor, and she said, there's something to this. I'm going to devote my entire career to this.
Well, if you want to read about the hero of the scientists that can really talk about, who Ray Hyman is?
Yes.
Ray Hyman is like that too, but he's somebody who's got his feet firmly on the ground, and he's still doing it. And his contributions to all of these studies are just gigantic, and he's still at it. He's 82 years old or something.
Important, though, I think, for us to separate what people think they're seeing, what they may be seeing without direct evidence, and what you're talking about in psychic blues, and that basically would be people who are hucksters.
Yeah.
Who are out to take advantage of people.
Yeah, well,
big difference.
I think that there are investigators and there are people that are doing it. I do it myself. And we're not trying to debunk. We're really trying to understand and get together with people and not have this sort of acrimony that, you're trying to put me down. No, we're not trying to put people down. We're trying to seriously find out a way to qualify it or quantify it. In other words, people say, do you believe in ghosts? Well, we don't know what a ghost is yet.
I've always wanted at one of these events to watch somebody say, so do you have this brother who died on a motorcycle? And I want the person to say yes. And then the psychic keeps going. And then I want the person to stand up and say, no, I don't. I made that up.
Yeah.
We'll be back.
Well, I've seen that happen.
Yeah, we're going to take final phone calls with you in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, we'll take a look on the other side of the coin, afterlife investigations. When we come back with Mark Edward, Psychic Blues, we'll take the rest of your phone calls here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Mark Edward with us, your phone call. Psychic Blues, Mark, where do people get the book?
You can get the book from, you can get signed copies from me at my website, www.themarkedward.com, or you can get them from Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, or from the publisher Farrell House Books.
I love the pictures in here, by the way, of your career.
Thank you. They're a collection that's been moldering away for years. I finally found a use for them.
It's cool. When you were a little kid, did you start experimenting and doing things like this in front of family and friends?
Yeah, my grandfather was a magician, so I was lucky enough to be his guinea pig when he would practice sleight of hand. I was the one who benefited from many years of watching Conjuring. And so, eventually when I was 11 years old, I had the zombie ball and the, all the fancy magic tricks. And that's why later I just became kind of unsatisfied with standard magic and got into mentalism. Because as a kid, I bought everything. I went to the magic shop and all those surreal props. I had to have every one of them, you know. So
as a kid, my first trick was, and I don't know if you remember this, the little magnetized mummy.
Oh, yeah.
Remember, and you would shake it, and there's no way you could put the mummy back in his little casket. He'd pop right out again.
Those are called vintage magic now on eBay.
Cool. I wonder what they all go for. I should have kept all my things.
George, can I tell you just a really quick story?
Yeah, sure thing.
About something that happened tonight, because I wanted to share this with you. So tonight, before the show, some friends of mine were in Santa Monica. We decided to go and get some dinner and go down to the pier, and they have a live music show down there.
Okay.
So I've never been there, and we go, okay, let's go. Let's get in the car and go. And we get down there, and there's probably over 1,000 people on the beach listening to the music and sitting on beach towels on the sand right by the pier. So we go over to where my friend's friends were, and we start talking about, I'm going to be on Coast to Coast. Who do you think out of that 1,000 people was sitting on the same towels within 10 feet of where I was sitting?
I have no idea.
Gina.
One of my assistants.
Well, she said she's one of the producers of the show.
Yeah, she is.
Yeah. So what are the odds?
That is amazing.
So, but see, that's my point. Things happen, but if I had called you and said I was going to make that happen, that would be a totally different thing.
How do you know I didn't make that happen?
Well, there you go.
See?
There you go. Exactly. So amazing things. I mean, that was pretty bizarre.
Good old Gina Salvati.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go to the rest of the calls. Mike in Ithaca, New York, east of the Rockies. Hi, Mike. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, Mark. Thank
Hi.
You very much for your contributions to Coast. I'm so grateful Coast exists. I was hoping, Mark, and grateful for the rest of the audience, too. I'm hoping, Mark, you could explain to all of us the gray elephant from Denmark.
Isn't that
what is that, a trick?
Uh-huh.
It's a verbal deception.
Yeah.
Are you going to tell us the rest of the trick?
Tell us, Mike, a little bit more about the gray elephant from Denmark.
I was hoping Mark could. I mean, do you want me? I'd rather have Mark do it because he could do a better job.
You know, it's ringing a bell, but I don't remember.
Okay,
it's a riddle.
You ask someone to think of a color, and then you say you take the third letter from that. Get an animal that begins with that, and then you say take the, I don't know which letter is third, second, whatever, double it, and, you know, what A is 1, Z is 26, double it. If it's a two-digit number, add them, and then that becomes the first or third or whatever letter of a country.
And what's the end result?
And most people will give, the vast majority of people will give gray elephant in Denmark, so if you tell them what they thought, they go, oh, yeah, you got it. You know,
It's a mathematical thing, isn't it, Mark?
Well, it's a mathematical, and it's again, probability and odds. There are an awful lot of what passes for mind reading that use those sort of things. In other words, if I ask you to think of a vegetable, you probably think of carrot. If I ask you to think of a flower, you're likely to think of rose, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a combination of called psychological forces, which I love. I mean, that's when you get into the area where you have no props and you're able to really baffle people by seemingly look into their mind.
Well, let's say if somebody flipped a coin 100 times and they correctly predicted heads or tails 70% of the time, would you say that that's a little beyond probability? I would.
I would have to talk to a statistician. Math is not one of my higher
because it should just be 50-50 eventually.
Well, but again, you're simplifying something that has to have protocol involved. In other words, to just say it is one thing, but to sit down and actually have a calculated way to report on it, keep the information correct. There's all sorts of things that go into it, but why not, if 70%, why not 100%? I mean, if somebody has the power, why should it just be 70%? You know, I mean, I've never understood that. It's like the psychics say, oh, I'm only 87% correct. Well, why? If you're in touch with dead people, you should be able to get 100% dead on every time.
What about hunches? Where do hunches fit in here?
Intuition, like we started off talking about. I think intuition a good police officer in a good you know, situation who uses their intuition, they call it the blue sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
they feel it. They take available facts and they put it into what they know, and they come up with a thought or theory for the moment.
A lot of times they will just go with what their gut level tells them.
Yeah. I mean, I won't go through a seedy area of town at night. My intuition tells me that's not a smart thing to do.
That's right. So there you've just stumbled on one of the great secrets of giving psychic readings is most people don't listen to that voice, George.
No, they don't. That's true.
They say, no, my friend told me to go around the liquor store this way. And they always, later on, they say, I wish I had listened to what my inner voice told me.
Yep.
So if you learn to listen to your inner voice, bingo.
Tom is in Sacramento, California on the wildcard line. Hey, Tom, go ahead.
Yeah, I had a reading in 1968 by a psychic called Irene Hughes, and she was like 99.9% accurate.
Now, did she know anything about you going in?
Very little. My stepmother set it up, and I don't know. No.
Well, yeah, I'm sorry, but you just threw that one.
She didn't tell her anything.
I know, but you
she didn't ask me any questions.
But
what we did is, as we were having lunch, she said, you ask me questions, and if I get an insight on something, I'll interrupt you. And then all of a sudden, she said, you're in the middle of a career change, and I had my papers to get in out of the Air Force.
Well, 50% of the people are in the middle of a career change, right?
She then describes, a year ago, you almost died. She described the incident that happened in Vietnam, the hills and the house and everything that was there, that we had a close scrape.
And you're sure the relative didn't unknowingly
pass anybody?
Anything.
That was private knowledge.
Nobody knew about
it. And say, gee, I almost died.
Nobody knew that in your family?
Nobody knew that, and she nailed it. Plus, I was meeting a girl that I had been dating on and off, and we're going to see if, you know, we could get together and perhaps get married. And I asked her about that. She says, no, I don't see her in your future at all. In fact, in about a year, your marriage cycle will start. And her name is Sharon. No, it's Cheryl. No, it's Sharon, but it's not Sharon. A year later, I met my future wife, and she spelled her name S-H-A-R-Y-O-N.
Who, by the way, is the daughter of the psychic? You didn't know that, did you?
No.
I'm kidding.
No, in fact, the mutual friend that introduced me to Sharon hadn't even met her yet.
It's not fair, Mark, to have you analyze this because you don't have enough data.
We've all got stories like this. Every single one of us can tell stories like this. But that's not what psychic blues is about. What I'm trying to tell you is, Yes, we all experience these amazing things. But if the psychic was 99.9% correct, why does she have to be a psychic? Why can't she help humanity? Why does she have to take one person at a time? And it's just, to me, I don't understand the gullibility factor here. I mean, to be there sitting next to you to hear how she was able to get your responses and the way your facial muscles move, the way your body language was. There's 100 different ways for somebody to make you think that they're telling you something there's no way that they could know. And I'm sorry to pour cold water on it, but, you know, if the person could do that, our version of reality would be substantially different. These people would be running the planet.
What would you say about the person who says, I can give you health tips for the future about yourself? I don't want any money. I want to do this.
Health tips or help tips?
Health tips. Through.
I would never take a health tip from a psychic. I'd rather go to a doctor. Hey, listen, would you rather, if your daughter swallowed poison, would you rather send her to the emergency ward or Sylvia Brown?
No, come on. Do you really want me to answer that?
I'm just saying.
You already know the answer to that.
I'm just saying, health tips. You need to go to a doctor, or you need to take care of yourself with somebody who's qualified. I never took legal or medical questions when I was infiltrating all these places, because that's asking for trouble, in my opinion.
Are you still at the Magic Castle?
Oh, yeah.
I got to come by and see you.
All right. Well, I'll let you know.
All right.
I'll let you know when I'm there.
Okay. Let's go to And I won't harass you either. I was kidding.
That's all right. I don't mind. I like hecklers.
I fully expect you to introduce me to everybody.
Okay.
Let's go to Gardena, California. Barbara's with us, west of the Rockies. Hi, Barbara.
Good evening. I have a story, too.
Sure.
Now, I see lights.
You see lights?
Yeah, just light phenomena. I see it.
What do you mean lights?
I don't want to explain that. Just take my word for it. I see lights.
All right. You see lights.
I was on the phone with the psychic. Psychic says, honey, what is all that electricity I see around you? I was in Jackson Square, Louisiana. Me and my sister decided to sit at one of those tables with the psychic. She says, honey, what are all those lights? What are all these lights around you?
Orbs everywhere.
Oh, wait a minute. I was at a Black Expo doing a business seminar for a group I belong to. You. There was a guy. He was standing, away from me, and he decides to walk over to me, and he says, do you see lights? I said, yes. He handed me a card. He belonged to some kind of Sufi center. So, to your guest, so what's going on? All of these people can see these lights.
Well,
have you seen an optometrist?
I knew you were going to say that, Mark. I knew you were going to say that.
Well, you're psychic too. No, I mean, I think lights, orbs, all this stuff is standard riff. Auras, white light around you. It's a come on line, It's a come on line to see whether you're going to jump into it. I won't say that is true with all the people who spoke to you. There may have been somebody who, I don't know, just figured that'd be a good line to introduce themselves to. But in and of itself, it doesn't really mean anything. Lots of people see lights. I see lights right now. I'm looking at one. It's a lamp. But what, in other words, where are you going with that? And maybe they noticed that there was something about your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
These are obvious things. Sometimes we give off things that we're not even aware other people can see. So again, I'm not saying it's an absolute, 100% prognosis on my part, but I would say see an optometrist.
Would you say of every so-called professional psychic
mm-hmm.
that 100% of them are pulling our legs?
No, I break it down to about, I'd say 85 to 90% of the people out there are outright charlatans that
okay.
are taking your money under false pretenses.
What about the other 10, 15%?
I'm going to get to that. The other 10 or 15% are people who are deluded, or they may have, we've tested some people who heard voices. They turned out that they were schizophrenics off their meds. There are some people who truly believe that what they're doing is a gift from God or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the dividing line is, what's the benefit, when you weigh it against what's the harm? In other words, what is it that you are doing to help humanity, not just yourself? So, and that's probably, a pretty big dividing line for me, for a lot of people. So the 10% that are out there, they step forward. There are people who have tests and who are offering lots of money on the table. If you can prove it with a mutually agreed upon test, that
condition.
Means both parties sit down. I'm here in LA. I'm with a group that tests people, and we want to get to the bottom of it. And we mutually sit down. Everybody agrees. They sign off on it. And then you do your thing.
Have you ever met someone who you thought might be the real deal?
No.
Not yet.
I'm hopeful. But like I say, it's
But you
just,
keep looking.
Well, I keep looking. That's why I got involved in the skeptical movement, because I realized that a long time ago in the 70s, that if anything real was going to be found or, discovered, it was going to come from the skeptical organizations or the scientists. It's not going to come from the believers, because they already believe. There's no sense in asking a Bigfoot collector, show me Bigfoot evidence. They already believe it. But if the skeptics or the people who are the ones that are honestly trying to investigate this thing, and I don't mean bumping around in a dark room.
Right. No, there's some great investigators out there.
Yeah, well, some of them say they're sciency, but they're not really. That's the latest thing, is there's a whole new crop of people coming up who use all these ghost hunting instruments, which doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, if a ghost is a non-material object, why are you going around using tools that are for measuring physical phenomena?
Well, what I like is we've got, for example, Dr. Brian Sykes, who's a geneticist, who's actually looking at samples that people have provided him. At least that's scientific, a Bigfoot.
Oh, okay. Well, but my point is, you know,
hair samples, things like that.
Yeah, the reality of it is that's what we need to look at, and I'm involved with people who want to do that. So we're here, you know, and we sit and wait.
What is the favorite part of your book, Psychic Blues?
I think my favorite part for me is it's called Ladies' Night. Ladies' Night was a party that I did. I did it a couple of years in a row where I was basically
Chapter 9.
Yeah, held hostage by a group of women who would not let me leave. It's frightening. I mean, it really is
They loved you that much.
Well, they just wanted their reading, and they had stood in line, and they were not going to leave until they got it. And this is after I had been giving readings for 4 hours.
Well,
you know what it's like to talk on the radio for four hours, don't you?
Every day, Mark. It's a lot. It is. Well, look, good luck with the book. Psychic Blues. Let's keep in touch, okay?
Yeah, I want to be your go-to guy, so, you know, call me.
All right, my friend. Mark Edward. You know, regardless of what you believe, it's always healthy to have another side on this program. We'll be back in a moment because we're going to talk about the afterlife on Coast to Coast AM.